Yesterday we heard how Maharaj Prickett was so renounced due to his great heartfelt attachment, full attachment for Krishna. And after Maharaj Prickett was glorified as being the proper hearer of the Bhagavatam, he asked Sukadeva Goswami two questions. He asked him about the creation of the material world by the Lord through his energies, and similarly about the maintenance and destruction or winding up of the material world, because Krishna, or the Lord, is the source of everything. So he's the source of not only the creation, but the source of the destruction of the world as well. And similarly, although not expressly putting it as a question, Maharaj Prickett stated how the Lord was one, meaning that he is one individual, although he in many ways deals with the material world, and he enters within the material world in so many different ways, expansions, etc. But yet he is just one individual. So implicit in that was the request to speak about, and as the questions also said, the two questions also said, how the Lord fully is dealing with the material world. And this will be answered by Sukadeva Goswami in the next three chapters. Now, in text 11, Sutta begins to describe to the sages of Namasharanya, he begins to describe the reply of Sukadeva Goswami. And it isn't that Sukadeva immediately started answering the questions. Now why? Because Sukadeva was an exalted devotee. And he knew that the power to correctly answer these questions was beyond himself, his own individual power. And therefore, he remembered the Lord, the master of his senses, Sri Rishikesh Anusmritya. He remembered the Lord, and he basically was praying to Krishna for the ability to answer the questions properly. That was the substance of the 11th verse. And in the 12th verse, basically till the very end of the chapter, the next to last verse in the chapter, which is 24, the next to last verse in the chapter. From text 13 to 24, these 11 verses, 12 verses, in text 12 until 24. Sukadeva, before beginning to answer the questions, which will begin in the next chapter, in chapter 5, he offers his obeisances to Krishna. He prays and offers his respects and subserviates himself before the person, that supreme person, whom he is trying to glorify. Who he is trying to glorify. Because without the blessings of Krishna upon his words, he will not be able to do it. So therefore, one of the qualifications for being a speaker of the Bhagavatam, a preacher, or any devotee who does anything, is this mood as exemplified by Sukadeva Goswami. One must know that practically speaking, because the Lord is inconceivably powerful, and the obeisances and prayers of that Sukadev offers to the Lord will speak only about this, about how powerful the Lord is, how inconceivably powerful He is. So in order for one to represent the Lord properly, because we are finite and He is inconceivably powerful, so how can we represent Him properly, either through our words or actions? How can we do it? It is only by His grace. So the first principle for devotion and devotional service, for serving the Lord, which we are now being taught by Sukadev Goswami, is that we must acknowledge that He is great. Unlimitedly and inconceivably great. We cannot understand the extent of His greatness. Just like for us poor folks, we can conceive of what $10 is or $100 is, or maybe even $10,000 or $100,000 is. We can conceive of that, but we can't conceive. When they talk about that the government has a debt of $30 billion or something like that, or we can't understand what that means. How many donuts is that? Or can you buy with $30 billion? How many? We can't really conceive of how much it is, because it is so far beyond our experience. What to speak of the power and potency of the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead? Now that has to be first acknowledged. That He is inconceivably powerful, and we are completely insignificantly small, completely dependent upon Him. This is called sambandhagyan. Knowing who the Lord is, knowing who we are, and knowing our relationship. He is great, we are tiny, insignificant. He is inconceivably great, we are insignificantly powerless. And anything we can do is by grace, and grace alone. So Sukadev, practically in the beginning, the first thing he's described in the opening chapters is that we should all, regardless of our position, worship the Lord. And here the beginning of the instructions on how to do that is given by His personal example, that we have to understand that He is so great and He is worthy of our full obeisances. So these verses, before He begins to answer the questions of Maharaj Prickett, He is already indirectly answering those questions by His offering obeisances. He's showing how powerful this Lord is. So, in text 13, we're going to go over these verses one by one and try to understand how they flow in the general ideas that He is developing. So the first thing that the Goswami, as Prabhupada calls him in the purport sometimes, in text 12, he says, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances after remembering the Lord." Remembering the Lord means subserviating himself with great devotion before Him. Sukadev said, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who, for the creation of the material world, accepts the three modes of material nature." So He uses, the Lord uses goodness, passion, and ignorance for the creation of the world. He is the complete whole. That means that He is everything. He is the totality of everything. This is the meaning of the Absolute Truth. Janma yasya taha. He is the totality of everything. There is nothing outside of Him and His energies. He and His energies comprise everything in existence. So he is the complete whole of everything. So he uses his energies of the three modes of material nature. He accepts these modes of material nature for the creation of the world. So he is the complete whole. But he is residing within the body, within the heart of everyone. Now, how is it possible for the complete whole, the sum total of all existence, to be within the heart of everyone, within everyone's body? And therefore, he says, his ways are inconceivable, because certainly this is impossible. But to do the impossible is not difficult for the inconceivably powerful Lord. So, we're going to hear through the obeisances of Sukadeva Goswami more about this inconceivably powerful Lord, because it is required for us, before we can take shelter of him with full faith and completely depend upon him and fully surrender to him, we have to have a deep realization of his inconceivability, his incredible power. Otherwise, how will we trust ourselves in his hands? Text 13. So, this verse explains how this inconceivable Lord, here we are, we're living entities, how does this inconceivably powerful Lord deal with us, the individual living entities? We are his tiny servants. How does he deal with us? So, Sukadeva Goswami explains, I again offer my respectful obeisances unto the form of complete existence and transcendence. Not only is he everything, he is beyond. Even though matter is not different from him, he is transcendental to matter. So Sukadeva offers his obeisances. He is the liberator of the pious devotees from all distresses, and the destroyer of the further advances in atheistic temperament of the non-devotee demons. For the transcendentalists who are situated in the topmost spiritual perfection, he grants their specific destinations. So how does he deal with the living entities? He deals with us individually according to our desires. He reciprocates according to the nature and the desire of the living entities. This is the key to understanding how Krishna deals. Yeyi tamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajam yaham. Srila Sridhar Swami comments, but these obeisances of Sukadeva's glorify the Lord and his ability to award different results, because those who are pious, meaning who have karma punya, who have material piety coming from the Vedas, he removes their distress. And those he kindly, the non-followers of the Vedas, he stops their demonic mentality from developing further. And the third kind of person that is spoken of, the topmost devotees, the paramhamsas, he awards those topmost devotees the appropriate destination. Now, in Prabhupada's purport, he explains exactly what those... first of all, he defines what the topmost devotee is. In Sanskrit, the word is paramahansa. And he describes how there are two kinds of paramhamsas. Paramhamsa is one who appears to be in the material world, but he's fixed in transcendence, knowing he's not his body. So there's two kinds of paramhamsas who don't, although appearing to be in the material world, don't actually reside in the material world. One is the impersonalist, whose desire is what? to become one with the Supreme, to have nothing to do with the material world and to live in spiritual existence. So how does he deal with them, with those personages? He absorbs them into his effulgence. And the second kind of Paramhamsa are the devotees, the great lovers of Krishna, who are called the Premanandis. They are full of the bliss of prema, of love for Krishna. And for them, he brings them to his own abode, to the spiritual world. So Krishna reciprocates individually with each individual, and it is ultimately to the Premanandis that Krishna awards the highest benediction. We'll discuss that a bit later. Then in text 14, so more about Krishna. Is that all that Krishna does? Is that all he does? His only business is different individuals have different desires, and his business is everyone queues up and they present their desire to the Lord, and then he reciprocates with them according to their nature and desire. That's all that he does? No. He is also in the supreme position as the supreme enjoyer. He himself enjoys having nothing to do with the independent desires for enjoyment of the living entities. So therefore, in the next text, in text 14, Sukadev continues, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto he who is the associate of the members of the Yadu dynasty." So this is talking about what the Supreme Lord does in the spiritual world, having nothing to do with the conditioned living entities. And he is always a problem for the non-devotees, because the non-devotees cannot understand him. They cannot understand the ways, the personality, the person, that he's a person. They cannot understand how he deals with the material world, how he deals in the spiritual world, why he does what he does. So he's problematic for the non-devotees, always. Especially they can't understand how is it possible that the Lord is a person. Although they cannot begin to explain that why the Lord, who is inconceivably powerful, if he wants to be a person, who can stop him from being a person? Oh, you can't be a person because that will limit you. Well, who are you to impose that upon Krishna? He's an unlimited person. So the non-devotees, because they don't have faith in Krishna's own words, can never understand this. He is the supreme enjoyer of both the material and the spiritual worlds. Yet he enjoys his own abode in the spiritual sky. There is no one equal to him because his transcendental opulence is immeasurable. So this is actually Krishna. Yes, he is the creator. He is the lawgiver. He is the ultimate destroyer of this world. He is in everyone's heart. He is the supreme controller. But these names are called, they are secondary names of the Lord that designate his power, which all have to do with the material world. But if he's the creator of the material world, by definition, that means that he existed before the material world existed. Otherwise, how could he create it? So what does he do before he is the creator? If he's the creator, that means that at some point the material world was created. So what does he do before that point? He has nothing to do. He's just waiting, seeing, is it almost time to create the material world? Oh boy, how much more time? nothing to do until it's time, otherwise I've... No, obviously. He's the supreme enjoyer. So he is in the spiritual world. This is Krishna. And then occasionally or regularly the material world comes and he does this. The creation of the material world, as we'll hear through his expansions and his energies. So he is the supreme enjoyer. And non-devotees have no access to understanding his position as the supreme enjoyer, especially his position that is dominated by mamata, or the great affection of his devotees. Have no ability to understand how Goloka Vrindavan cannot understand. Because his transcendental opulence is immeasurable, and they're trying to measure what God should be by their own brains, and they can never understand Krishna Vrindavan especially. So he is the supreme enjoyer. Aside from his reciprocation with the living entities, he is the supreme enjoyer. Now, what relevance does this have, especially for us? Now, text 15, in these obeisances of Sukadeva Goswami, there are three verses that are especially famous. And this text 15 is one of them, a very, very sweet verse, and we'll read Prabhupada's purport on it. Yat kirtanam yat smaranam yat ikshanam yat vandanam yat shravanam yat arhanam lokasya sadyo vidanottikam sam tasmai subhadra shavase namo nama. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna, about whom glorification, remembrances, audience, means seeing him, prayers to him, hearing and worshipping him, hearing about him and worshipping him, can at once cleanse the effects of all sins of the performer. And Srila Jiva Goswami says this word when it says yat kirtanam, this yat, he says, means just once. That if one person just one time engages in the glorification, remembrance, prayers, hearing about or worshipping this all-powerful Lord, who is the transcendentally, inconceivably powerful, supreme enjoyer, who is reciprocating with all living entities according to their desires, just hearing about him immediately destroys sins. Now listen to Prabhupada's purport. The sublime form of religious performances to free oneself from all reactions of sins is suggested herein by the greatest authority, Sri Sukadeva Goswami. Kirtanam, or glorifying the Lord, can be performed in very many ways, such as remembering, visiting temples to see the deity, offering prayers in front of the Lord, and hearing recitations of the glorification of the Lord as they are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam or in the Bhagavad Gita. Kirtanam can be performed both by singing the glories of the Lord in accompaniment with melodious music, and by recitation of scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. The devotees need not be disappointed in the physical absence of the Lord, though they may think of not being associated with him. The devotional process of hearing, chanting, remembering, etc., either all or some of them, or even one of them, can give us the desired result of associating with the Lord by discharging the transcendental loving service of the Lord in the above manner. That means that all these processes, this Navanga Bhakti, this Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, hearing about, remembering, glorifying, etc., the Lord, these are no different from Krishna. So they can give us the desired result of associating with the Lord by discharging the transcendental loving service of the Lord in the above manner. even the very sound of the holy name of Lord Krishna or Rama can at once surcharge the atmosphere spiritually. We must know definitely that the Lord is present wherever such pure transcendental service is performed. And thus the performer of offenseless kirtanam has positive association with the Lord. Similarly, remembrance and prayers also can give us the desired result if they are properly done under expert guidance. One should not concoct forms of devotional service. One may worship the form of the Lord in a temple, or one may impersonally offer the Lord devotional prayers in a mosque or a church. One is sure to get free from the reactions of sins, provided one is very careful about not committing sins willingly in expectation of getting free from the reactions of sins by worshiping in the temple or by offering prayers in the church. This mentality of committing sins willfully on the strength of devotional service is called namod balad yasya hi papa buddhi, and it is the greatest offense in the discharge of devotional service. Hearing, therefore, is essential in order to keep oneself strictly on guard against such pitfalls of sins. And in order to give special stress to the hearing process, the Goswami invokes all auspicious fortune in this matter. So, in this connection, Sridhar Swami comments that text 15 and text 16, the next verse, remembers the glories, or reminds us of the glories of faithful devotion. And Srila Jiva Goswami says that this verse shows that the Lord's glories can be remembered, and we can benefit from that remembrance even when the Lord isn't present, and that yat is in the singular shows repetition of the Lord's glories on one occasion is sufficient to remove a man's sins. So therefore, we've heard about this that he's so powerful that just hearing about him cleanses the heart. Just remembering him and glorifying removes all sins from the heart. And therefore, what should one do? As Jiva Goswami points out, that one, all men, should therefore seek refuge in the Lord. Text 16. Let me offer my respectful obeisances again and again unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna. The highly intellectual, simply by surrendering unto his lotus feet, are relieved of all attachments to present and future existences, and without difficulty progress toward spiritual existence. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Lord Sri Krishna has repeatedly instructed Arjuna, or for that matter, everyone concerned with becoming his unalloyed devotee. And the last phase of his instruction in the Bhagavad Gita, 1864 through 66, he instructed most confidentially as follows. Savagayattamam bhuyashanume paramam vacha istosime dhidamaiti tato vakshamite hitam manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyajimam namaskuru mam vivasyasi satyam te pati jane priyosime savadamam prityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tam sava papebhyo mokshyashami masucha. My dear Arjun, you are very dear to me, and therefore only for your good I will disclose this most secret part of my instructions. It is simply this: become a pure devotee of mine and give yourself unto me only, and I promise you full spiritual existence by which you may gain the eternal right of transcendental loving service unto me. Just give up all ways of religiosity and exclusively surrender unto me, and believe that I will protect you from your sinful acts and I shall deliver you. Do not worry anymore. We'll skip a little. As enunciated by Srila Jiva Goswami on the basis of Vedic assurances, Brahmagati in the verse, Brahmagatim Gataklamas. Brahmagati means to attain a spiritual form as good as that of the Lord. That means that Krishna will bring us and allow us to attain a spiritual form as He has a spiritual form. And in that form, the liberated living being eternally lives on one of the spiritual planets situated in the spiritual sky. In the 60s, during the Vietnam War days, in San Francisco, one of the young devotees who was worried about getting drafted into the army, he asked Prabhupada, "What is it like in Goloka Vrindavan?" And Prabhupada replied, "You won't be bothered by the draft board." Meaning, you won't have to worry about those kind of the things that worry you now. But the spiritual world is far different than not being bothered by the draft board. But what can we, who are enclosed so much within the material world, in the material mind, in the material intelligence, in this gross material body, what can we understand of what it's like to be in Goloka Vrindavan and to be relating with Krishna in one of the rasas in a spiritual form? So to bring us to that position where we are purified enough to be able to understand this and to increase our desire for this and to decrease our desire for material, for those things of matter, because everything is based on our desire. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami is speaking this Bhagavatam to bring us to that position. Attainment of this perfection of life is easily available to a pure devotee of the Lord without his undergoing any difficult method of perfection. Such a devotional life is full of kirtanam, smaranam, ikshanam, etc., as mentioned in the previous verse. One must therefore adopt this simple way of devotional life in order to attain the highest perfection available in any category of human form, in any human form of life, in any part of the world. When Lord Brahma met Lord Krishna as a playful child at Vrindavan, he offered his prayer in which he said, Shreya Shratim Bhakti Mudasyate Vibhu Klishyanti Ye Kevalaboda Labdaye Tesham Aso Klishala E Vasishyate Nanya Yatastula Tushavagahatinam. And the translation of Lord Brahma's prayer is, My dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path of self-realization. Because again, Jiva Goswami has said, commenting on Sukadeva Goswami's verse, that this verse means that everyone to take shelter of the Lord, take refuge of Him, surrender to Him. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process and will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot gain grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. Prabhupada continues, Bhakti yoga is the highest quality of perfection to be achieved by the intelligent person in lieu of performing a large quantity of spiritual activities. The example cited here is very appropriate. A handful of real paddy is more valuable than heaps of paddy skins without any substance within. Similarly, One should not be attracted by the jugglery of karmakanda or jnanakanda or even the gymnastic performances of yoga, but skillfully one should take to the simple performances of kirtanam, smaranam, etc. under a bona fide spiritual master and without any difficulty attain the highest perfection. So one should perform devotional service. And this devotional service is so powerful that if one performs other activities such as karma or jnana, some types of mysticism, some types of charity, if these things are not connected with devotion, they will bring no true results. There will be no ultimate benefit. So therefore, in the next obeisance, Sukadeva Goswami says, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna again and again. Because the great learned sages, the great performers of charity, the great workers of distinction, the great philosophers and mystics, the great chanters of the Vedic hymns, and the great followers of Vedic principles cannot achieve any fruit of results without dedication of such great qualities to the service of the Lord." So how powerful is his service? And in one sense, one of the greatest tests of the power of the devotional service of the Lord is the next verse. Let's give it in the next verse. That he's so powerful that even one who is sinful, very sinful, becomes purified. Kirat, this is a very famous verse also. Kirata hanandra pulinda pukasa abhira sumba yavana kasadaya enyeta papaya lapasrayasraya sudyanti tasmai prabhavishnave nama. Kirata, Huna, Andhra, Pulinda, Pulkasa, Abhira, Shumba, Yavanas, members of the Kasha race, and even others addicted to sinful acts. In other words, everyone, regardless of one's background, and in the purport, Prabhupada tells where all these different peoples are currently located. So even one, everyone, even if one is addicted to sinful acts, they can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord due to his being the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto him. So how is it possible? How is it possible because the Lord is Prabhavishnu? That's how it's possible. He's unlimitedly powerful. Powerful Vishnu. So he is so powerful, like the sun. When it arises, it is so powerful it can destroy any quantity of darkness. So sin ultimately is based on ignorance. Agyan. So the Lord and the Lord's devotees are so powerful they can destroy this ignorance of anyone. So this verse is very important for the Krishna consciousness movement, because in India at times people say that no one who is not born as a Hindu or sometimes even as a Brahmana can actually become transcendental, can actually become a Vaishnava. They say this. So this verse disproves that. It's actually decrying the power of the Lord to insist that it's one's birth that limits one's power. One actually, when the unlimited Lord arises in one's heart, or one takes shelter of the names of the Lord, who can stop that purification from taking place? Prabhupada explains in the purport. Now, in this purport, it's interesting because it gives a hint of of some of the hopes. Now, Prabhupada wrote this, if I remember correctly. Prabhupada wrote this. This was in the first canto Prabhupada wrote before he came to the West. But the second canto is what Prabhupada was writing while he was in the West. So Prabhupada wrote this. I remember in 1969 this was being typed up, but he was writing it, or even 68 rather, 68, 69, this was being typed up, and Prabhupada had been writing this in the 60s, 66, 67, like that. So here's some of the hopes that Prabhupada has. The above mentioned historical names are different nations of the world. Even those who are constantly engaged in sinful acts are corrigible to the standard of perfect human beings if they take shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Jesus Christ and Muhammad, two powerful devotees of the Lord, have done tremendous service on behalf of the Lord on the surface of the globe. And from the version of Srila Sukadeva Goswami, it appears that instead of running a godless civilization in the present context of the world situation, if the leadership of the world affairs is entrusted to the devotees of the Lord, for which a worldwide organization under the name and style of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness has already been started. So that means this was written this after 66 when it was actually begun. Then by the grace of the Almighty Lord, there can be a thorough change of heart in human beings all over the world, because the devotees of the Lord are able authorities to effect such a change by purifying the dust-worn minds of the people in general. The politicians of the world may remain in their respective positions because the pure devotees of the Lord are not interested in political leadership or diplomatic implications. The devotees are interested only in seeing that the people in general are not misguided by political propaganda, and in seeing that the valuable life of human beings is not spoiled in following a type of civilization which is ultimately doomed. If the politicians, therefore, would be guided by the good counsel of the devotees, then certainly there would be a great change in the world situation by the purifying propaganda of the devotees, as shown by Lord Chaitanya. As Sukadeva Goswami began his prayer by discussing the word Yat Kirtanam, so also Lord Chaitanya recommended that simply by glorifying the Lord's holy name, a tremendous change of heart can take place by which the complete misunderstanding between the human nations created by politicians can at once be extinguished. We can see this, that today in so many places throughout the world, so many interest groups, so many groups are fighting and hating each other and killing each other. This one group wants to be independent. This group is plotting a revolution. This wants to be autonomous. Just fighting and killing each other. And the arms suppliers are selling their machine guns and bombs and anti-tank missiles and planes, warplanes, to both sides, just hoping that there'll be a good battle, because then they need replacements for what they have. And the politicians are pushing and pushing and pushing. But if the people's hearts were purified and understood these bodily designations were really insignificant and temporary, and that things happen according to karma, and that our real home is in the spiritual world, how these things would change. So what does the world need? It needs knowledge, purification and knowledge and devotion. Devotion and knowledge means bhakti vedanta. So if this would, a tremendous change of heart can take place, by which, and it comes by kirtanam, by which the complete misunderstandings between the human nations created by politicians can at once be extinguished. And after the extinction of the fire of misunderstanding, other prophet will follow. The destination is to go back home, back to Godhead, as we have several times discussed in these pages. And then right at the end, the last paragraph. The conclusion is that the Lord, being all-powerful, can, under any and every circumstance, accept anyone from any part of the world. That immediately brings the possibility of equality and brotherhood. That if people become devotees, then they are Vaishnavas, regardless of the externals of their birth. Master. Lord Chaitanya accepted many devotees from communities other than the Varnashramites, and he himself declared to teach us that he does not belong to any caste or social order of life, but that he is the eternal servant of the Lord who maintains the damsels of Vrindavan, Lord Krishna. That is the way of self-realization. And the final obeisance. After describing how powerful the Lord is, that if we just surrender to him just by chanting his name, all impurities and sinful limitations can be removed, even if we chant just once but repeatedly. And regardless of one's birth, one can be uplifted to the Vaishnava platform and go back home, back to Godhead. And therefore, Sukadeva Goswami continues. He is the super soul. He is in everyone's heart. And the supreme Lord of all self-realized souls. He is the personification of the Vedas, religious scriptures, and austerities. He is worshipped by Lord Brahma and Shiva, and all those who are transcendental to all pretensions. Being so revered with awe and veneration, may that Supreme Absolute be pleased with me. Now, this verse is very interesting, especially Prabhupada's purport. Now, the one word in here is Gata Valikar, which means that those who are above all pretensions. Now, here Sukadeva Goswami, after saying everyone can worship him, he's now explaining the process of worshiping him. Because we've heard previously how the Lord reciprocates with all the living entities according to their desires. But the interesting question, is, what is the ultimate? If the Lord is reciprocating with us according to our desire, so many people go to him and pray, and he gives them according to their desire. But what is the limit that the Lord can award? If he's reciprocating according to our desire, what is the limit that he will give us? What is the highest thing, in other words, and what is the qualification to get that? So Prabhupada explains in his purport. Much of the purport is about this point about lack of pretension in performing devotional service. A living entity, this is about midway through, a living entity by his constitutional position cannot be devoid of all desires. What does pretension mean? Yeah.
Similar to hypocrisy, false claim to virtue.
Yeah. An element of it. What simple word is in the word pretension?
Pretend.
So what does the word pretend have to do with the word pretension?
Yeah.
And why is pretension a disqualification?
Yeah. Pretending something on the outside is different from the inside.
Yeah, like that hypocrisy. So when someone goes to the Lord and says, "My dear Lord, you are the Supreme Lord, you are the all great, the all powerful, you are the suitable object of worship, please give me this. Please give me a new car and fix my knee joint. And not only that, this person over here is giving me trouble. Please have him be hit by a truck." There is a hypocrisy, a pretension going on, because one is not going to the Lord to worship Him. One is going to the Lord to get something from Him. And people generally think that this is the purpose of religion. And Krishna, as we heard before, is reciprocating with everyone according to their mentality and their desires. So whatever, he is like a yayatamam prapalyante. You go to Krishna, whatever you want, he will give you. He's like, he's the ultimate godfather in that sense. He's God the Father in that way. But is that the limit of the living entity's relationship with him? And if one has no pretension, not going to him to worship, to get anything from him, but just going to him to love him, to serve him, to give to him, having no other desires, as we heard, akama sava kamava moksha kamudaradi. If one is akam, what can one get? What will the Lord do? How will the Lord react? How will he reciprocate with such a person? So Prabhupada explains. The living entity cannot be devoid, cannot be void of all desires. The bhukti-kami, mukti-kami, and siddhi-kami all desire something for personal satisfaction. But the nishkami devotees of the Lord desire everything for the satisfaction of the Lord. They are completely dependent on the orders of the Lord and are always ready to discharge their duty for the satisfaction of the Lord. In the beginning, Arjuna placed himself as one of those who desire self-satisfaction. For he desired not to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra, but to make him desireless, the Lord preached the Bhagavad Gita, in which the ways of Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Hatha Yoga, and also Bhakti Yoga were explained. Because Arjuna was without any pretension, he changed his decision and satisfied the Lord by agreeing to fight. Kurishye vachanantava. And thus, he became desireless. That means bhakti. That means his desire was to please Krishna's desire. The examples of Brahma and Lord Shiva specifically cited here, because Brahmaji, Lord Shiva, Srimati Lakshmiji, and the four Kumaras, Sanak, Sanatana, etc., are leaders of the four desireless Vaishnava Sampradayas. They are all free from all pretensions. Srila Jiva Goswami interprets the word Gata Balikai as Projita Kaitava, or those who are freed from all pretension, the unalloyed devotees only. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said, Krishna Bhakti Nishkama Ata Eva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhi Kami Shakali Ashanta. Those who are after fruit of results for their pious activities, those who desire salvation and identity with the Lord, with the Supreme, and those who desire material perfections of mystic powers are all restless because they want something for themselves. But the devotee is completely peaceful because he has no demand for himself and is always ready to serve the desire of the Lord. The conclusion is therefore that the Lord is for everyone because no one can achieve the result of his respective desire without his sanction. But as stated by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita 8-9, all such results are awarded by him only, for the Lord is Adishara, the original controller of everyone, namely the Vedantists, the great Karmakandiyas, the great religious leaders, the great performers of austerities, and all who are striving for spiritual advancement. But ultimately, he is realized by the pretensionless devotees only. Therefore, special stress is given to the devotional service of the Lord by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. So this very deep subject of pure devotional service and the results, the ultimate results, the prayojana, the ultimate necessity or result of pure devotional service, the highest limit of that devotional service, will gradually be revealed by Srila Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prickett. And here, in his obeisances to the Lord, he is indirectly talking about the highest results, while directly offering his obeisances to this all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom every living entity, every living being, his business is to serve with great devotion. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
How does one avoid the tendency for pretension when one has sides in the heart which are completely contradictory to half the devotion?
We chant Hare Krishna with Chaito Dharpana Manjanam, cleanses the heart. We associate with devotees. We avoid the sinful activities. We hear about Krishna. Our desire to serve Krishna, to remove the pretension, to see all the obstacles, all these things confronted. As our desire to serve Krishna increases. And there's an interesting dynamic that takes place, that as our desire increases, in one sense, we become more and more aware of the strength of the obstacles in our heart, of our material desires and our material disqualifications. And that brings forward our Siddha Pranali. Siddha Pranali means our process of perfection. And that is Trinadapi Sinichena, Tororapi Sihisnuna, Amanina Manadena, Kirtani Asadahari. That jewel of humility, which Mahaprabhu said that we should wear around our neck, will award us the ability to take shelter of the holy names, which will award Krishna's service. So, in one sense, those awful qualities which so much pollute our consciousness are turned into our best friend by making us starkly aware of our own incapacity, starkly and painfully aware of our own incapacity, and therefore in that state of mind one can chant the holy name and take shelter of the holy name. So the answer to that question is the basic process of Krishna consciousness.
In the last paragraph of text 18.
Yeah. Did we read that?
Yes.
The one about the conclusion, was that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's about the beginning.
Yeah.
It seems that this chapter, text 19, before so much talking about pretension.
Yeah.
It occurred that to abandon this process that we've been given a chance to take up.
Yeah.
And specifically in regard to propagation of a Varnashram type of consciousness that's going on now in the society. It seems to de-emphasize a process which is the highest fortune and which Prabhupada stresses, Srila Prabhupada stresses here, is possible for anyone of any community, even in one.
Right. The Varnashrama, there's two levels on which Varnashrama exists. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur use the phrase Daivi Varnashrama, which means Varnashrama, or the divisions of society, is divided in such a way that it supports the principles of Vaishnavism, the principles of making spiritual advancement. And in Daivi Varnashrama, our position in one of the Varnas or one of the ashrams is half taken seriously, but not fully taken seriously. Half taken seriously, like a person performing a drama, a part in a drama. So when a person's performing a part in a drama, he has to perform his part. He can't get up there and just, you know, joke around and make believe he's not supposed to be performing that part. No. So similarly, but yet he knows that he has another life that doesn't have anything to do with the part of the drama. So what Varnashrama does is it brings our material nature, and it aligns it with the spiritual purpose, if it's done in a Daivi Varnashrama way. Huh?
That's actually the doubt, because the discussions I've heard on it are very much seeking solutions to problems, but with no reference to these books.
Oh, then that's probably not going to be very effective, is it? Because what holds the Varnashrama together is the very thing that holds the Vaishnava principles together, and that is the holy people who are absorbed in hearing and chanting and always glorifying Krishna. If that's not there in the Varnashrama system, then it will be cast into hell. It won't work. But Daivi Varnashrama means that. It includes sadhus, brahmins, sannyasis, whose main business is to keep their heads above the drama in one sense, and always keep their consciousness focused on the ultimate. But I also, if someone spends a lot of time on the internet and gets full of all the, you get caught into this, you know, you become an anti-Varnashrama thing, and in this way you get sucked into the dualities of existence and take this side of the issue, and some people are taking that side of the issue and fighting about that, and in this way you'll lose your life. Any other questions or comments? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Sukadev Goswami Maharaj, Prakriti Sutta Goswami, Shonaka Rishi, and all the thousands of Rishis ki jai.